Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
It's exactly 5 p.m. here in Bonn, Germany. Hello and a very warm welcome to this edition of Africa Link. My name is Jen Nyinge.
And my name is Eunice Wanjiro. We are coming to you from our live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. And we are also live on Facebook. That's DW Africa.
Yes, indeed. Coming up, peaceful procession held in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, following a deportation to Canada, opposition politician Miguna Miguna.
This is the lowest that this government can sink, because before you deport a person, you need to be very sure that this is not a citizen of this country. If this is a citizen by birth, there is no way he can be deported.
And President Jacob Zuma's fate continues to be a waiting game. But why is it difficult for him to step down?
Jacob Zuma has some charges hanging over his head, corruption which he committed before he became president. So he feels that if he goes right now, it might be the time for those charges to be brought back.
Well, these are some of the stories that we've lined up for you. But first, let's hear what has been happening around the world.
I'm Kai Dombach with the DW News. Germany's government will have a grand coalition once again. Chancellor Angela Merkel's Christian Democrats, sister Christian Socialists, and center-left Social Democrats hammered out the final details and agreed to a coalition deal. The terms of the deal must now be agreed to by Social Democrat members. Acting Finance Minister Peter Altmaier heaved a sigh of relief.
A really good day for our country. The chance that we soon have a new government is very big. We have a coalition agreement that means positive things for many, many citizens. And now we all want to have a shower because we have negotiated long and hard over the last few hours.
If it is approved by Social Democrat members, Merkel will likely serve a fourth consecutive term as chancellor. Cyril Ramaphosa, leader of South Africa's ANC party, said Wednesday that President Jacob Zuma's future will be decided in the coming days. Zuma is facing increasing calls to step aside in favor of Ramaphosa. Ramaphosa said he is holding direct talks with Zuma about the best plan of action, further fueling speculation that Zuma may soon be forced out of his position. Kenya's Chief Justice criticized his government in a rare public statement. David Maraga warned that disregarding recent court orders was a violation of the Constitution. Opposition leader Miguna Miguna said he filed 5 court orders to be freed after he was arrested for attending fellow opposition politician Raila Odinga's mock inauguration last week. Miguna was charged with treason in court on Tuesday and deported overnight. This news comes to you from Deutsche Welle, Germany's international public broadcaster. The European Union has banned the practice of restricting internet content to particular regions or geo-blocking for most online content within the EU. This will likely increase access to online services to other countries in the EU. However, copyright materials such as video on Netflix are exempt from the ban. Aerospace manufacturing company SpaceX successfully test-launched its Falcon Heavy rocket. The world's most powerful rocket is now on its way to orbit Mars with a Tesla car owned by SpaceX and Tesla founder Elon Musk inside the cargo hold. Musk was worried about a possible failure, saying before the launch it would have been successful if the rocket was, quote, far enough away from the pad that it doesn't cause pad damage. French Foreign Minister Jean-Yves Le Drian said it was likely the Syrian army used chlorine gas in the ongoing conflict. Le Drian told the local broadcaster on Wednesday that, quote, all indications show us today that the Syrian regime is using chlorine gas, end quote. His statement comes after UN-mandated investigators were looking into multiple allegations of chemical weapons use in rebel-held areas near the capital of Damascus and Idlib province. Le Drian also criticized Turkey's offensive in northern Syria, saying they should not get involved and add to the war. For more news and information, please visit our website at dw.com. I'm Kai Dombach.
You're listening to Africa Link. I'm Eunice Wanjiro.
And my name is Jen Nyinge. Remember, we are also on Facebook, DW Africa. We start off in Kenya, where the Chief Justice has criticized the government's recent defiance of a series of court orders, actions that he said threatened the rule of law. In a rare public statement, David Maraga, who rose to international attention last September when he nullified the presidential election, warned that government's refusal to comply with various court orders undermined the constitution. This comes in a wake of protests from lawyers over the deportation of opposition politician Miguna Miguna to Canada. Government officials claimed he was deported because he had renounced his Kenyan citizenship. From Nairobi, Andrew Asike with more.
The peaceful procession by the High Court lawyers in the Kenyan capital Nairobi was to condemn the deliberate act by state officials to flout the Kenyan law. The lawyers accused the state of continuing to break the law on various occasions, including detaining politician Miguna Miguna, despite three court orders calling for his release. I spoke to one of the lawyers who took part in the procession, Bernard Ngetich, who said that the government failed to uphold the constitution and the rule of law by deporting Miguna.
And I think this is the lowest that this government can sink, because before you deport a person, you need to be very sure that this is not a citizen of this country. If this is a citizen by birth who has not renounced his citizenship, there is no way he can be deported. Yes, the government not only broke the law, but they also abused police power by incarcerating a citizen of this country and purporting to deport him. It's very grave.
Lawyer Brian Kinyua also voiced similar sentiments, saying that the government is worsening the political situation in the country and things might get out of hand.
They know they are actually breaching the constitution. Yes, that is blatantly what they are doing. There is nobody above the law, not even the president, and he has even admitted not once, not twice, severally.
Miguna Miguna was arrested last Friday for taking part in illegal swearing-in of opposition leader Raila Odinga as People's President and remained in police custody despite being freed on bail by a Nairobi court. Later, the government issued a statement that Miguna's Kenyan citizenship had been revoked and he had been deported to Canada. But why has the government not arrested Odinga, who took the oath of the presidency? A question I put to lawyer Bernard Ngetich.
It is common knowledge within the country and outside the country that Raila Odinga has a fanatical following, and not just a fanatical following, but big masses who, if they are that their leader has been touched, they would be on the streets. They would almost make the country to be ungovernable. More importantly, there is no offense that Raila Amolo Odinga has committed for purposes of Section 40 of the Penal Code where treason is concerned. There was no offense on treason or related to treason that was committed by any person if you read the law very strictly.
Kenya's Interior Security Ministry said that the opposition politician Miguna Miguna was deported because he had renounced his Kenyan citizenship.
Andrew Wasike there reporting from Nairobi. Eunice, this is a hot topic on social media. What are people saying?
Oh, yes, it definitely is a hot topic and we have received quite a number of comments. We actually asked the question, should African politicians holding public offices be allowed to hold citizenship of another country? If yes, where do you think their allegiance would lie? Well, Mike, who is in Germany, said they should not hold citizenship of other countries. That is practicing double standards. Worse off, you even dump the citizenship of a country you're leading.
There is this one from Ken in Nairobi. He says, if you intend to lead your people, it is a bad example to be of a dual citizenship.
And John Mulenga from Zambia says, President Dr. Chiluba wasn't a dual citizen, yet he stole our country's money only to invest in foreign countries. I mean, millions of dollars. So whether one is a dual citizen or not, he or she still can betray their country. Quite a strong comment there.
Absolutely. But now the question is, Miguna is Kenyan by birth. And I mean, he has another citizenship of Canada. And Kenya has, someone can have a right of dual citizenship. So what happens in this case?
Very interesting. Well, we'll see what goes on in the process. But I think born Kenyan, you'll still remain a Kenyan.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. Anyway, elsewhere in the world, let's head to Germany, where the German Chancellor Angela Merkel and her conservatives have struck a deal during the coalition talks at the expense of losing control of the finance ministry to the Social Democrats. Now, the leader of the Social Democrats, Martin Schulz, will now have to convince his party members who will decide the fate of the third grand coalition government with Merkel in a vote to take place by post in the coming weeks. DW's Eddie Maika Jr. has more.
An agreement may have been reached, but nothing is guaranteed yet. To secure a fourth term as chancellor, Angela Merkel is embracing the demands of her Social Democrat SPD coalition partners for European reform. Merkel believes the deal is overall good for Germany and Germans and that it was reached with them in mind.
Now we know that to be sure that the people in Germany prosper in the future, that we need to improve our infrastructure, that we need to tackle the challenges of digitization. We need to be faster in achieving change. We need to get more dynamism in many areas as well, which is why we have a whole chapter called New Dynamism for Germany that sets out some of these key demands.
The next finance minister is likely to be Hamburg Mayor Olaf Scholz, a keen advocate of European integration who has been critical of Merkel's Eurozone policy in the past. Though the SPD will take control of the finance, foreign affairs, labor and social affairs, Merkel believes her Christian Democrats retained important portfolios, including health and agriculture, and believes that the coalition negotiations had been worth it. Horst Seehofer, leader of the Bavarian sister party of Chancellor Angela Merkel's Conservatives, says the deal offers a positive way to overcome divisions and polarization in German society.
Eddie Maika Jr. compiled that report.
We head now to South Africa, and ANC leader Cyril Ramaphosa has announced that he's holding direct talks with Jacob Zuma over a transition of power. Zuma has been in power since 2009 and has been a weakened position since his deputy, President Ramaphosa, replaced him as ANC leader in December. Earlier, I spoke to DW's Tuzo Kumalo in Johannesburg, and he started by telling me the latest developments on the talks.
Today, it is the third time that Zuma is being engaged, trying to make sure that he steps down as the country's president. The first to talk to him was the top six of the ANC. Today, the National Council of the ANC was expected to talk to him, but it had to be cancelled because he's engaged in talks with Cyril Ramaphosa.
Why has it become difficult for President Zuma to acknowledge his time is up and he should step down?
Quite a lot of issues that are coming into play because you know that Jacob Zuma has been or is facing or has some charges hanging over his head, corruption charges, corruption which he committed before he became president. So there are strong feelings that he feels that if he goes right now, it might be the time for those charges to be brought back. And also within the ANC, Zuma has a lot of support. You remember when the current ANC president Ramaphosa was elected, it was almost 50-50. The margin between him and Zuma's candidate, who is Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma, was very minor. And it seems Zuma still has a lot of people that want him to still continue.
Well, as you rightly put it, it seems right now there are two centers of power in ANC. How do you think this might play out going forward? Because according to many analysts, Zuma's position as the president became untenable as soon as Ramaphosa won the ANC elections in December.
The observation for many analysts, they are saying for the ANC to win the next year's elections, they can't have President Zuma as their face because they are saying the president's face is tainted with corruption, is tainted. The Constitutional Court has found that he breached the Constitution by not implementing what was directed by the public protector. So a lot of issues around him. And people are saying, even the ANC members, they are saying they can't have him as the candidate. And at the same time, they want to make sure Ramaphosa takes charge of the party and the country so that he directs the country forward, even to the international investors. And they think Ramaphosa is the right person to represent the country. Hence, most of them, they no longer want to see Zuma there. They want Zuma to vacate so that Ramaphosa get in, leads the party and leads the country towards the next year's elections. Because for the ANC now, the support is dwindling because of the image of the President Jacob Zuma. So they hope by putting Ramaphosa in charge of all the structures in the country and in the party will do well in the next year's elections.
Tuzo Kumalo in Johannesburg.
Now, I'd like to take you back to our top story where an opposition politician by the name of Miguna Miguna in Kenya has been deported to Canada. And we've had people commenting on this, Jane.
Yes, indeed.
Come on, let us hear what have people have been saying.
We have a lot of comments here, and Isaac Godwin, who is writing from Nigeria, says, I don't see the reason why many of them keep doing this kind of betrayal to their own homeland. Although the benefit is numerous, mostly their dissidents benefits greatly.
Thank you so much for your comments. And in case you've just tuned in, you're listening to Africa Link. Welcome. My name is Eunice Wanjiru.
And my name is Jen Nyinge. We welcome your comments on these stories that we are covering. Just go to our Facebook page, DW Africa, and leave your comments. We will read them here, live on air.
Coming up in the next 15 minutes, Ghanaians in the northern part of the country struggled with water shortage crisis.
It comes on and off, and it's a hell. We don't have water. As Ananda, I'm talking to you now. And I'm sorry to say this, but I have to say it. I did not bath coming to work.
Plus, we visit a small island off the coast of Senegal that is facing the threat of rising sea levels.
But first, we begin with phone tapping, which is an issue commonly known in countries like the USA with its National Surveillance Agency. It is, however, a topic that has been debated in some African countries like Uganda, Kenya and Rwanda, whether it should be legalized or not. This is mostly done by government security agents. Now, Rwandan Parliament is set to pass a bill that allows the country's ombudsman's office to be the only civilian institution that can apply for a phone tapping warrant. From Kigali in Rwanda, Nasra Bishumba with more.
In Rwanda, phone tapping is considered lawful only if it's done in the interest of national security. This is according to the current law on interception of communications. However, lawmakers will soon put a final seal of approval on a bill that allows the Office of the Ombudsman to acquire a phone tapping warrant in what the government says is a move to fight corruption. Gilles Marius Nete, the Inspector General of the National Public Prosecution Authority, told the parliament why the government felt the need to add another institution.
Even the ombudsman can be added to those who can apply for a phone tapping warrant. We agree that we should not seal this and stop only on security matters, because there are crimes like terrorism and human trafficking, which we feel that naturally they should be added to this list that may require phone tapping. We can't open this list to just anyone, but we must look at this list of crimes that need to be considered, especially because of their seriousness and also because they can be committed using phones as one of the tools.
Up until now, only the National Army, the police, and intelligence institutions were allowed to apply for the warrants, which can be issued only by the Prosecutor General and his deputy. The move has been met by resistance from Rwandans. Jarik Muhoza is a businessman in Kigali. He tells me why phone tapping is going to infringe on the basic human rights of communication.
If there are people whose job is to investigate crimes, there should be other ways. This means that people are going to stop using their phones freely. They are going to abandon them altogether. We are going to find other ways to communicate. We will now be holding back when we are having conversations. This infringes on our freedom to communicate freely.
Freedom, your communication is disorganized.
Thierry Gatete Nyiringabo is a human rights lawyer based in Kigali. He says that phone tapping has chilling effects on people's privacy.
Creating a new entity to tap into people's privacy is quite unjust and unfair. Also quite uncomfortable with the fact that the Prosecutor General is the one who decides on whether private telephones can be tapped. I believe this is a duty of courts, because the prosecution is already a party in the case. The ombudsman is someone who's supposed to check the government. The prosecution is an arm of government. Now, for the ombudsman to apply to the Prosecutor General, it's extremely problematic.
In 2016, the Rwandan Parliament proposed that the government should begin listening in on civil servants' private communications to fight corruption and related crimes. Parliament is set to pass the bill without resistance.
That was Nasra Bishumba in Kigali, Rwanda, talking about phone tap. Now, there have been comments that have been coming in also regarding this report, Jane.
Yeah, and on Facebook, Joseph in Cameroon says, people private rights must, and as a matter of fact, should be respected because in Africa, we make good laws that favor the rich and torment the poor.
John from the United Arab Emirates is saying, oh yes, it gives them too much power, and I agree because corruption has put Africa where it is now. So the government should bitterly fight against it without mercy. Well, let's
those are your comments, so please keep them coming on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
On the spot.
To Ghana now, where the northern part of the country is struggling with a water shortage crisis due to the ongoing drought and pollution of water bodies. The Ghana Water Company has already announced that the country will experience water rationing, including in the capital, Accra. The company has warned that the country could be importing water by 2020 if water bodies across the nation are not properly managed. Isaac Kaleti with more from Ghana.
Scores of residents in Ghana's coastal community of Tishi wait patiently in queues to access water for a fee from a commercial water service provider. Some have walked long distances to this place to get water. For weeks now, their taps have run dry due to a water rationing policy by the Ghana Water Company Limited, and the impact is devastating for a majority of them.
We are suffering about water because another side will come, but as from our side, the pipe doesn't come.
Very difficult. For example, when there's a shortage of pipe in the tank, it's very difficult for us to get the pipe. Sometimes a week or 2 weeks before we get some. So it's very difficult. We are living in strange, very challenging here.
For some, like Jonas Mensah, who are unable to get water after a long wait, would have to endure going about their daily activities with some level of discomfort.
It comes on and off, and it's a hell. We don't have water. That's another I'm talking to you now. And I'm sorry to say this, but I have to say it. I did not bath coming to work, and it's very appalling. I'm begging whoever is in charge, the powers that be, they should do something about it.
In a statement, the Ghana Water Company Limited said the country is facing severe dry season this year, a phenomenon which is rare. Water bodies have dried out, and those still with reasonable levels have been polluted due to human activities. One of the major causes of this pollution has been the illegal mining of gold close to rivers. This is the Prayer River in western Ghana. It has virtually dried out, and the color of the water has turned yellowish, requiring the silting compounding the crisis. Journalists were taken on a tour by the Ghana Water Company Limited officials to see the extent of destruction and the seriousness of the impact on the current water crisis in some parts of the country. The company's regional chief manager, Teiku Kuju, explains why the river bodies are being desilted.
For this particular year, yes, the river level has gone down, but the silt levels have been very, very high, and we can't use manual means to get the silt out. That is why we brought in this equipment to do the desilting, to allow us to get adequate quantities of raw water for us to do our treatment.
Kujo says his company can no longer provide Ghanaians with adequate water, but hopes the situation improves soon. But there are no indications when the crisis would end, and there are fears among some Ghanaians that the situation could worsen. Ghana's lawmakers have now summoned officials of the water company to a meeting in the coming days to find a solution.
Isaac Kalechi in Ghana. And on our Facebook page, we posted this question. Is Ghana next after Cape Town's water crisis?
And this had people commenting. Nana Kojo Dampare says the Ghanaian situation is far different from the Cape Town situation. Illegal miners prefer to destroy the water bodies in Ghana with mercury and other toxic chemicals than to allow Ghanaians have long-term benefits from their water bodies.
And Sham Omaru Hassan says, with the way the climate is becoming lately, I think many countries, if not cities, are going to face water shortages. I hope the government of Ghana can come up with innovative ways to solve the water shortage problems.
I really hope people can see that this climate change issue is really something we have to consider, like be aware of what we are doing for our climate.
Absolutely, because right now it's Ghana. We are also talking about Cape Town, and I think also there is also a problem with water shortage in Nairobi, Kenya. So they've identified those three cities to have a particular problem with water.
Oh yes, thank you so much for your comments. Keep them coming.
Living Planet Africa.
Gorée, a small island off the coast of Senegal, is feeling the threat of climate change and rising sea levels. The island is recognized as a World Heritage Site. Protective dikes on the north side collapsed after heavy rains 2 years ago. And with the shoreline receding by 17 centimeters annually, residents, local officials and UNESCO are struggling to find ways to combat coastal erosion. From the Gorée Island, Emmanuel Lande has more.
The ferry shuttle from Dakar to Gorée Island takes just 20 minutes, and the exploration on foot begins the minute you step off the boat. The 2,000 residents welcome some 200,000 visitors every year. There are no cars on the island, perfect for strolling through the sandy alleys to admire the beautiful 18th century facades of brightly coloured houses. But there are also signs this historical island is facing an existential problem. Sea levels are rising at a disturbing speed around the island of Gorée. Residents like Emily, in her 50s, remain stoic about the state of the island.
No, we're not scared, but it's still dangerous.
Over the years, she's seen part of the cliffside near the mosque crumble into the sea, and on the other side of the island, a large protective dike washed away after a heavy storm 2 years ago.
C'est tombé en plein jour. Tombé en plein jour.
It fell in the middle of the day, just like that. The authorities need to take more responsibility. Everything on the coastline is ruined. It's bad.
Regardless, the island continues to draw tourists, oblivious to the environmental impacts taking their toll on one of Dakar's checklist excursions. The island is a vast open-air cultural complex. Gorée was the infamous transit point during the Atlantic slave trade. A visit to the island is unimaginable without a visit to the House of Slaves. Several thousand of the 12 to 20 million victims of the transatlantic trade were trafficked off the continent from Gorée Island. History is everywhere, but for how long?
When we arrived on the island 15 years ago, we planted trees, coconut trees. A year ago, these trees were underwater, and little by little, the breach that had started to appear was becoming worse. That day was a disaster. Really, a lot of things fell into the water.
That's Annie Juga, the joint mayor of Gorée. The island's shoreline is shrinking by 17 centimetres every year, and on average, sea levels rise here by 2.32 millimetres annually, according to research from environmental researchers at Dakar's Cheikh Anta Diop University. Despite the impact of climate change thirstily lapping at its shores, the island is getting a makeover in the name of aesthetics and ecology, part beautification project and part sustainable development. With the international support, UNESCO has repaired the broken dikes to keep the sea at bay. And if this proves successful, technically and architecturally, similar renovations will then be applied in other parts of the island. The cost of renovating the entire island has been estimated at 40 million euros by UNESCO. Worth every cent, according to residents like Bayla Ba, the imam on the island.
Gorée needs to be made safe and maintained by specialists, even if this maintenance demands a lot of construction. I am scared of the water and that rising sea levels will attack our island.
A report by Emmanuel Lande. Jane, another story about climate change.
Very sad indeed, Eunice.
Well, another topic on the 77% question of the day is about infertility. And we asked, can infertility affect women's rights? We had a story here where a lady was talking about how she couldn't give birth and then she was beaten and pushed away from her home. And we asked, what do you think, what affects women's rights in the country where you live? And Josephine Cameroon commented and said, infertility can't and should not affect women's rights and pride, because the goal in marriage is not how fertile the woman is or the woman is, but how you love each other. And one last one here in Kote, Benin said, we Africa much try to respect women's rights. Thank you for your comments. I'm Eunice Wanjiro.
And my name is Jen Nyingi.
Bye for now.